Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, June 20, 2019. Lawmakers boo South Sudan's Minister of Finance during a parliamentary session. And church leaders say victims of sexual violence should be protected.
We invite all citizens, local communities, and public institutions to refrain from discriminating, rejecting, restraining, and stigmatizing survivors of sexual violence in conflict.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese lawmakers today booed the country's finance minister as he attempted to present the 2019-2020 fiscal year budget. The lawmakers were protesting the government's failure to pay the salaries of civil servants and security forces for the past several months. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
Lawmakers in South Sudan's Transitional National Legislative Assembly stood up and demanded Finance Minister Salvatore Garang to leave the podium as he tried to present a proposed 200 billion South Sudanese pound budget. President Salva Kiir's cabinet approved the proposed 2019-2020 fiscal year budget about a week ago. Copies of it had already been distributed to the more than 300 MPs in attendance. But at the opening of today's session, Parliamentary Speaker Anthony Lino Makana appeared to have known something was about to happen, instructing MPs to allow the minister to present the budget and to raise any concerns later. But when Garang rose to the podium, the lawmakers demanded that he step aside, refusing to hear his budget presentation after the government stopped paying state civil servants 7 months ago and national civil servants for 6 months ago. Elizabeth Adud represents Northern Bahr-Ghazal State in the Transitional General Assembly.
Our army is now cutting down the trees to make shako for their children to survive. Our foreign mission are now one year. We are not able to pay our foreign mission. Almost 1 year. Our teachers are not teaching our children. Our teachers prefer to work with the organization than with the government. We have no qualified teachers, especially at the grassroots level. What are we doing?
Adud says because the government has not paid the salaries of security forces, soldiers now erect roadblocks to extort money from commuters so they can feed their families. The proposed 2019-2020 fiscal year budget of 208 billion South Sudanese pounds, the equivalent of $1.4 billion, has a 77 billion South Sudanese pound deficit. The proposed new budget exceeds the 2018-2019 fiscal year budget by 100 billion South Sudanese pounds, but does not lay out how government revenues will pay for government expenditures. MPs say even though the cabinet approved the budget, they will not give their approval to a budget that does not explain its revenue or expenditures or pay government employees. MP Durai Mabor-Teng represents Western Lakes States in the General Assembly.
The budget should be proposed based on the budget which have the reserved. But if the budget has been proposed by the cabinet and passed it to the parliament without knowing that what is the reserve of this budget, the resource envelope, that's number one. And to make it worse, you cannot actually present the new financial year to the August House when you have not paid the arrears of 6 months of the last financial year, the 2018-2019.
Mabor says Garang should take the proposed budget back to the cabinet so that needed resources are mobilized and civil servants are paid.
This house will never be ready and cannot be ready to actually to accept the Minister of Finance present this budget to the house when 6 months' salary is not paid to the state, when 6 months' salary is not paid to the army.
Teng says if Minister of Finance Garang fails to pay civil servant salaries, he should be fired before a new budget is presented. About 90% of South Sudan's revenues come from oil production. The proposed budget allocates about 10 billion South Sudanese pounds for what is called peace expenditures. Assembly Speaker Anthony Lino Makana abruptly cancelled today's budget session following the commotion in Parliament.
I hereby adjourn the sitting for today until I call you again.
Some Juba residents say the Parliament's move to call off the budget reading comes too late.
It is a good initiative by the Parliament, but where were they when things were on mess? They have been going forward. They saw what has happened all this time. And they are even among the civil servants who are receiving salaries. But they also should have defended them from the beginning. They have to summon the Minister of Finance and they have to summon all these authorities in the regards to financial matters. The Minister of Petroleum, where we normally have our money that comes from the petroleum sector. But they did not approach anything. Now, when it reached, the matter reaches worse, now they want to prove that they are working. But according to me, I don't think anything here is tangible coming out from the parliamentarians. Because this is not the right time for them to act. They would have reacted before. Now, when things are almost going down, now they're saying they are reacting.
They have delayed, you know, because at the moment, very many civil servants of the government have already deserted their work. Some are already working with the NGOs. Others have gone to the private sector.
A couple of Juba residents say before lawmakers approve the budget, they should make sure civil servant salaries are paid and increase the pay of government workers. It remains unclear when or if Garang will present a revised proposed budget, as many lawmakers say they will only sit when the government pays the salaries in arrears for both civil servants and security forces, including soldiers. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
The South Sudan Council of Churches has denounced the stigmatization of survival of sexual attacks. Church leaders describe sexual violence against women and girls as one of the worst crimes committed during South Sudan's five-year conflict. Onan Walter Solomon has this report for VOA from Juba.
A 16-year-old schoolgirl we are identifying as Jane to protect her privacy was raped while walking on a road near her house and became pregnant. Today, she walks into a counseling room where sexual gender-based violence survivors receive UN-funded support at the Juba Teaching Hospital. Jane says she never knew she was pregnant until her aunt told her she was and forced her to terminate the pregnancy.
She said the pregnancy should be terminated because I'm still young and a primary aid candidate this year. I accepted her advice. My aunt took me to a doctor at Jebel where he administered a drug into my body, which never worked. The second attempt, the drug killed the fetus in my womb. I went to an Egyptian hospital, which then referred us to Juba Teaching Hospital, where the fetus was terminated yesterday.
Dr. Samuel Lege is head of the Clinical Management of Sexual and Gender-Based Violence Survivors Unit at Juba Teaching Hospital. Dr. Lege says the hospital is helping Jane recover both physically and mentally.
We give her some antibiotics, painkillers, and then some Pharos to boost her blood. She's given psychological also, and then legal counseling.
Dr. Lege says the hospital will provide Jane with the documents she needs to file a legal case against her rapist, who has gone into hiding. At today's news conference organized by the South Sudan Council of Churches in Juba to draw attention to the problem of sexual abuse in South Sudan on this International Day to recognize sexual violence in conflict zones, U.S. Ambassador to South Sudan Tom Hushek said, of all the atrocities committed against civilians during the country's five-year conflict, sexual violence is the most heartbreaking one.
This conflict has really been characterized by a very high degree of sexual violence and crimes against women and other victims of sexual violence. So it's very important that the church is emphasizing this, and addressing this problem in a full way is really one of the key ingredients to building peace in this country. There is no peace unless this problem set is addressed. Civil society, the government, the opposition, the internationals, we all need to really work on addressing this issue.
Hussein noted that the U.S. believes it's important to make gender-based sexual violence a part of his foreign policy. Justin Badi Arama, the Archbishop and Primate of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, read a statement on behalf of the church leaders, urging South Sudanese leaders and ordinary citizens to recognize the rights of survivors of sexual violence in the conflict in South Sudan.
We invite all citizens, local communities, and public institutions to refrain from discriminating, rejecting, restraining, and stigmatizing survivors of sexual violence in conflict. We implore all citizens and local communities to welcome back to the community those survivors who are returning after captivity by state and non-state forces. We urge all stakeholders to allow survivors of sexual violence who want to speak up about the violence they suffered without being silenced by the stigma usually associated with such crimes.
But he says all stakeholders, including the media and political leaders, must raise community awareness to address the stigma associated with sexual violence and make people understand it is wrong to blame the survivor of sexual violence.
We recommend the improvement and availability of all services that the survivors need: health and psychosocial care, justice, and economic empowerment. We encourage survivors to access services established for them in public institutions and other service provision points.
The church leaders also recommend that perpetrators of sexual violence find ways of repentance. For VOA News, I am Onan Walter Solomon in Juba.
A UN investigator is urging the international community to denounce Saudi Arabia for what she calls the premeditated state execution of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi. The investigator is calling on nations to persecute individuals implicated in Khashoggi's murder. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
UN Special Rapporteur on Extrajudicial Summary or Arbitrary Killings, Agnès Callamard, says the killing of Jamal Khashoggi is an international crime, which grants states the right to prosecute suspects under the claim of universal jurisdiction.
In other words, I have called upon member states that have domesticated universal jurisdiction to take the necessary measures to investigate and indeed try whoever may be on their territories who is associated to the crime and for whom there is credible evidence that they participated to the crime.
Kalamar welcomes the strong denunciation by the international community of Khashoggi's murder last October in Saudi Arabia's consulate in Istanbul. But she tells VOA that actions taken in response to the crime have focused only on individuals and not on the state, which is responsible for the extrajudicial execution of the Saudi journalist.
The international community has not taken that into account. They moved rapidly to identify 15, 17 individuals for targeted sanctions. They have not tackled the chain of command, so those individualized sanctions could be seen as a smokescreen.
She says she cannot believe that Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman was not aware of the violations that have taken place over the past year leading up to Khashoggi's death.
I believe that the Crown Prince should be the subject of further criminal investigation in order to determine whether or not he had any kind of responsibilities for the killing.
Saudi Minister of State for Foreign Affairs Adel bin Ahmed has issued a blistering statement accusing Kalamar of littering her report with unfounded and false allegations. He says the report lacks impartiality and credibility because it relies on media reports and on unnamed experts. The special rapporteur tells VOA she stands by the evidence contained in her 101-page report. She says she did not name her sources for their own safety. She says she has kept careful track of the sources of all the information she has gathered. Kalamach says she would be willing to hand over that information to an international criminal investigation, but she says she will not hand over that information to Saudi authorities because they have demonstrated that they cannot be trusted with the safety of her sources. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, refugees in South Sudan say they lack identification documents. Find out more on this story after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you believe in yourself?
Yes, I believe in myself. Because I love myself, I know I can make it.
I do believe in myself to the fact that I'm convinced that I have potential.
Yes, I do. I do believe in myself because I know I have the ability, to do many things that I believe I can do.
Oh yes, I really believe in myself. I'm a hard worker. I try as much as possible to be focused in life and to see it away that my children are catered for.
It depends on the area. If it has to do with an area where I'm very good at, I really believe in myself. But an area where I'm not good at, I don't really believe in myself.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. As the world marks the World Refugee Day, some refugees in South Sudan say they cannot access banking services because they lack identification documents. One Sudanese refugee who teaches in Juba says it's difficult to travel in South Sudan because she has no ID. South Sudan's humanitarian affairs minister says the government is working to change that. Ding Magot reports for VOA from Juba.
Samia Mansour Abdallah, a Sudanese refugee who is deputy head teacher at Mahad Juba Secondary School, says she has lived in South Sudan for 7 years since fleeing a home in the Juba Mountains, where civilians often come under attack by Sudanese soldiers and government warplanes because of the presence of SPLM North rebels in the area. Abdallah says even though she is lucky to be employed, she still faces challenges just moving around the city with a piece of paper as identification.
Problem of protection here we're facing as refugee. We have a lot of refugees that facing the problem of arresting when they having this, they carrying these IDs. So it is not well known. So we my request to government of South Sudan to let it be aware, because some people use it in bank and others use it in their movement and others working, and they sometimes become arrested in workplace.
17-year-old John Okwom Agada, who fled South Sudan because of conflict in Ethiopia in 2007, is now a student at Juba Day Secondary School. Okwon, who recently won this year's World Refugee Essay organized by UNHCR, says he fled South Sudan due to insecurity in his home country, but still feels South Sudan is not as safe either.
When war interrupted in 2013, sometimes maybe war could have caught me in the market. So those are the bad things. I would have thought, like, I came due to insecurity, and again, I find more insecurity. The message I could share to them is just keep their hope alive, study hard to achieve a better future.
Hussein Mar Nyoth, South Sudan's Minister for Humanitarian Affairs and Disaster Management, says the government will soon provide identification documents to urban refugees so they are able to move freely across the country.
Indeed, there are refugees and asylum seekers who are actually in towns, people who are not living in refugees camps. Their identifications are being fast-tracked. so that they give them identification. And this is very important because this will give them their rights. They will have been their documents, as already mentioned, like the passports or all the documents that the refugees get from the government, the host government.
Johann Sifon, the UNHCR representative to South Sudan, says his agency is working with the government to put measures in place that will strengthen the 2012 Refugee Act.
The government recently established a refugee eligibility committee to assist asylum seekers. And we have now a fully functional new reception center to receive them. In the initial emergency phase, UNHCR and its partners on the ground help to provide protection, shelter, food, clean water, medical care, etc. Yet, it is the people in local communities who share so much, who bear the burden, too often for many years. The spirit of community is manifested every day in thousands of small acts of solidarity in South Sudan.
Bol John Akot, the Commission for Refugee Affairs in South Sudan, says there has been a steady increase in the number of refugees in the country over the past several months. He says South Sudan hosts some 300,000 refugees and more than 400,000 asylum seekers, most of whom have come from neighboring Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Ding Magot in Juba.
Still on refugees, food aid has been replaced by mobile money payments for refugees in Cameroon. The system allows refugees to choose what food they buy and helps women so they don't rely on their husbands in the mostly polygamous society. For VOA News, Muki Edwin Kinzeka has this report in Gado, Cameroon.
Jenaba Abdoulaye, a Central African Republic refugee in eastern Cameroon, no longer has to ask her husband for rations of food aid. Instead, she does her weekly shopping with aid money for refugees that was transferred directly to her mobile phone. Jenaba says the program helped her a lot by giving her a lot of capabilities. As she is in a polygamous home of three women, her husband used to take food for all of the family and shared it among the three wives. Now, she says, each wife has her phone, benefits from the assistance for her children and herself, and uses it as she wants. Aid agencies in Cameroon introduced the cash-based transfer program in 2016 to increase the efficiency of refugee support. Before the transfer program, only the head of a refugee household, usually the husband, received the monthly rations of oil, salt, sugar, beans, and cassava flour. The mobile payment system is not unique to Cameroon. But for the mostly polygamous CAR refugees, it has been empowering because every wife is treated as head of a household and receives a monthly allowance. Nana Amao is head of the local World Food Program office.
The BFP is currently assisting 48,000, just about 48,000 refugees via cash-based transfer. And one of the main reasons why cash is becoming more and more important in the humanitarian context is for WFP, it gives the beneficiaries the choice of food to select in the food basket that's available.
The WFP provides refugees with a mobile phone and SIM card that access an electronic portfolio to receive the monthly allowances. The electronic transfer of aid has also helped male refugees like local shopkeeper Mama Lamin. He says the program allowed him to take care of himself and to solve the problems of his family. Now, he no longer depends on food assistance, says Lamin, and can take care of his children's school fees and equip his house. While limited by telecommunications, the use of mobile cash transfers is expected to grow and give more refugees choices about what they do with the aid they receive. For Anne Zwanke in Gado, Cameroon, Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News.
Tens of thousands of Cameroonians who fled their country because of political turmoil are now living in Nigeria. Nigerian authorities say more than 35,000 refugees have arrived in the country since 2016. But refugee advocates say the number is much higher, more likely to be 70,000. As the world takes note of Refugee Day today, Nigerian authorities say they will begin voluntary repatriation of some Cameroonian refugees. Timothy Obiazu has this story for VOA from Abuja.
46-year-old Ernest Cho was a merchandise trader in Cameroon before he fled the country with his two sons in search of asylum in Nigeria. Cho is among more than 437,000 Cameroonians forcibly displaced by unrest in the southwest and northwest regions of the country. Now he tries to start his life again in Nigeria's capital.
My home in the village, virtually nobody is staying there. We don't have a single life in my house in the village. Everybody has been displaced.
About 35,000 Cameroonian refugees are in Nigeria, according to the UN Refugee Agency and local officials. But refugee advocates say that figure is more than double, an assertion Nigerian immigration authorities, including Sadia Umar, dismiss.
That 5,000 only from Cameroon. But as I mentioned, we have refugees from other parts of the world. So it's not in our records, we do not have 70,000.
Like in many parts of the African continent, Nigeria is affected by internal displacements and the refugee crisis. More than 2 million people north of the country are displaced from their homes and living in makeshift camps because of attacks by militant Islamic groups. Hundreds of others have also sought refuge in Chad, Niger, and Cameroon. UNHCR Nigeria and ECOWAS representative Antonio Yose says returning refugees to their homes will not be easy.
The reason for which they have run away needs to be solved. When you talk, for instance, of Cameroonian refugees, if they feel excluded from the national politics, it is only at the point when the situation in their country that they will be returning.
But unless the political crisis in Cameroon comes to an end, refugees like Ernest Cho would rather be away from home. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Sudan by Lomerica Jazz Band.
Sudan, Sudan is number one in Africa.
We've been listening to Lomerica with the song Sudan. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We appreciate you being here. Please join us tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Ni
nasiwa idere.